I can't believe I'm bringing a case about a kid. You know I hate kid cases.
Yeah, but you brought it up, and I mean, I think it's a case worth talking about.
Welcome to the Brothers in Crime podcast.
We are brothers.
We talk about true crime.
We don't take ourselves too seriously.
And you shouldn't either.
I watched this trial. It was in Tennessee, and they do things a little different, at least in that courtroom. It was an interesting and perhaps enlightening case, we'll say. The trial was against Robin Howington, and she is the mother of 5-year-old Destiny Oliver. Now, at 8:53 on September 14th, 2019, so we're a few years back now, Robin calls 911 and says, I have an emergency. This dude was just at my house and my daughter just got shot. And then she gives her address and goes on from there. Now, that's terrible. She's 5 years old. Mm-hmm. But let's back up the timeline a little bit. That was 8:53. At 8:29, there's a video camera on the neighbor's house that catches sort of what's happening in front of Robin Howington's house. And this is in Fountain City, Tennessee, outside Knoxville, or as part of Knoxville. Anywho, this camera captures that at 8:29, there's this car that arrives at Robin's home. Nobody gets out of the car. It sits there for about 2 minutes and leaves at 8:31. 10 minutes later, a car, not sure if it's the same car or not, arrives at Robin's home, sits with the lights on. Then Robin's car comes home a minute later at 8:42. A minute later, you see Destiny, the 5-year-old girl, walking inside the house. She's followed by Robin, who's carrying the youngest son, Gavin. He's 2 years old, so she carries him in. Now, that car that showed up at 8:41, it keeps sitting there with its lights on. It's just parked there. Mm-hmm. And then you see the house door open 5 minutes later at 8:46. And then about 30 seconds later, somebody from that parked car walks up and goes into the house. 63 seconds later, that person leaves. Now, the state says that the person in that car was there to buy drugs, and so Robin got her kids in the house, got them kind of settled, and then opened the door saying, okay, come on, it's good.
That's, you know, when you're first describing this, it reminded me of a place I used to live where there was a drug dealer across the way, and that's pretty similar to how things worked at their house.
Yeah, I mean, it's a plausible explanation.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's what happened, but I mean, that's, you know, maybe they're picking up their pampered chef. You never know.
Yeah. All right. So after that person leaves, after 63 seconds in the house, then a few minutes later at 8:48, Robin goes out the front door, moves her car, and then goes back inside. She says that she was parked out front, which was in front of the mailbox when she got home so she could get the kids in, but she needed to go move the car because she's parked in front of the mailbox and the mailman is not happy if you're parked in front of the mailbox.
You got to deliver rain, sleet, snow, wind, whatever. You got to always deliver the mail.
Now, she also at one point said the reason she parked in that different location was because she thought somebody was following her when she was coming home from the park. She had taken the kids to a park. Hmm. Her and a friend and the kids all kind of had a little outing or whatever. She thought somebody was following her. So at one point, she said that was the reason she parked in front of the mailbox to begin with.
Would she have a reason to believe? Was this like a random, like, oh, just somebody I thought was following me? Or was there like, oh, you know, there's people that sometimes follow me and I thought that happened?
Well.
Or am I getting ahead of you?
With her story, it's very difficult to put it down in one straight line. Mm. It's more like throw all these different things up in the air and they land in a different place every time. And sometimes some are still on the table and sometimes they're not.
I see.
So it might make a little more sense as we go further, but I can't promise you that. That's 8:48 when she goes out to move her car. At 8:50, she goes back inside the house through the door. Then at 8:53 is when she makes the 911 call. Now, the video also shows, and they synced this up, at 8:53, about 20, 30 seconds after she connects with 911, you can see her walking out her front door where she's putting something in the bushes, which later be discovered was the weapon that shot her daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, right. While she's on the phone with 911 telling them, you know, somebody shot my daughter, she's
tossing the gun that was used to shoot her daughter.
Exactly. Some say it was hidden in the bushes. I mean, really, this was a Charlie Brown kind of bush. It had some leaves on it, but she wasn't hiding it very well. It was just, yes, it was on the ground. It was technically under a bush, but it was, this is a small house on a small lot. You know, the neighbors are real close and everything. This thing wasn't hidden well.
Hmm.
So, and this is incredible. 3 minutes later, 3 minutes after she dialed 911, the first police officer is there.
Wow.
Right?
Go ahead. What'd you say? This was Knoxville? Is that where we are?
Yeah, Fountain City, Knoxville.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Fountain City. Good response time there. Good grief.
Per his report, he approached cautiously because all he knows is there's been a shooting.
Yeah.
And as someone who has responded to these kinds of things, weird incidents that come through 911, nothing against the 911 operators, but all I really need to know is where am I going? Because 90% of what the 911 operator relays to me is going to be inaccurate anyway. I'll figure it out when I get there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that is not the 911 operator's fault. That's usually they're getting bad information third hand.
On that point, I remember once, you know, in my brief time in your world where we were responding to a call for a car accident that turned out to be a shooting. And we got pretty close to the scene. You could see the cars and stuff. And it was like as we were pulling up that the dispatch updated the call and said, oh, turns out it's an active shooting. And right. I remember it was like, urch! Okay, we're gonna stage and wait for the police to show up. Thanks for the update. So, yeah. To your point, you never really know what you're running into.
Yeah, and again, I'm not ragging on dispatchers because they have a horrible job and can only relay the information they're given.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, as far as the officer approaching cautiously, he knows where he's going and he's got a hint here that there's been gunfire involved. So yeah, he's going to go a little more cautious than he would if it was to help get a cat out of a bush or something like that, you
right,
know?
Right.
He says that when he went inside the home, so the front door is open, but like the storm door, screen door is closed. It's a glass door on the front of the house. He can see in the house. He goes in and you go through like a sort of a hallway-ish, another room type thing back to the living room that's in the back of the house. And Robin is sitting on the couch on the phone. And it was really quiet, he said, like eerily quiet in the house.
Hmm.
Not at all what he was expecting.
Hmm.
And he's like, you know, what's going on? Was somebody shot? She points to Destiny, who's laying on the armrest of the couch.
This is her, like, 5-year-old daughter?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure.
He thought this was really, really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
As would I, because when kids are sick or injured and the parents are there, they are usually frantic.
Yeah.
Especially a kid's been shot.
Well, I would imagine she'd be holding her, or maybe if the operator, the 911 operators instructed her to do CPR or something like that, I could see her doing that. But if not, I would expect her to be, you know, holding her.
She said she put a towel on her, and she says that she was on the phone with 911 when the officer came through the door. There was some discrepancy about that with the times that the state thought that call disconnected before the officer got there. But she says it was 911 she was on the phone with.
Hmm.
We'll never know, I guess, what the real answer is to that. But yeah, for it to be really quiet in there and for someone to just kind of, you know, just point over in the direction of the injured child, the child of the 5-year-old that had just been shot.
Yeah.
That is strange.
That is very odd.
You would expect hysteria.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, there's a lot that's hinky already.
I mean, I've seen a lot of those kind of situations. Sometimes a parent will be trying to, you know, keep it together and they'll want to be helpful, or they will be lost and confused and not know what to say or where to go. But you can always just look at their face and there's a huge tension.
Mm-hmm.
90% of them are screaming hysterically, help my baby do something.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're trying to help themselves.
They sure ain't sitting there saying, oh yeah, over there pointing to their kid with a towel. Right.
And she said nothing. She just pointed.
Yeah, I mean, my gosh.
So he grabs Destiny and runs outside with her so that, like, as soon as the ambulance pulls up,
yeah,
you know, they're
what you would expect
ready.
Mom to be doing, right?
Pretty much waiting outside the house with her in her arms going, because this is a small child.
Yeah.
You know, she's 5, but she's not big or anything.
Okay.
So the police asked her at the scene about the incident, and she said that she was sitting on the couch with Destiny when an unknown male came in and shot. He said nothing. He looked surprised after he fired the gun, and then he ran out the door and left in a dark-colored Chrysler 300 with dark tinted windows.
Well, there's only like 10,000 of those on the road.
Now, this is the same thing that she had told 911 when she was on with them, and they asked who did it. She said, you know, some dude just came in, and he shot her, and he looked surprised, like, I think maybe it was meant for me, and then he ran out. And so they began to ask her, like, was he black or white? And she said it was a black dude. And then what was he wearing? A black shirt. What kind of car did he leave in? A black Chrysler 300. I don't know if she was on a black theme or what.
Couldn't think of any other colors that day, I guess.
Right. Now, the issue for the officer that was questioning her there on the scene was that she said she saw the vehicle the shooter left in while she was sitting on the couch, which means she'd have to be looking through the rest of that living room, out through another room, through the front door, and into the dark. And he really thought that was pretty much impossible for her to identify that car as a Chrysler 300 black with dark tinted windows that took off. But he believes he's dealing with a grieving mother. You know, he's not suspecting her at this point, so he's trying to figure it out. She asked how she was going to get to the hospital, and the police apparently had said, we will take you. So they end up taking her to the hospital where Destiny has been taken by ambulance. On the way, she was sending text messages and making phone calls to several people, including her current boyfriend, Callie, and a man who she had sold pills to. Not Callie. And what she was asking them to do was go to her house and retrieve the gun that she had hidden under the bush. To her drug customer, she added, I got you for free, which seems like it was saying, your next pill order is on me, no charge for doing me this favor. And she explained to one of them that one of these people, because she texted and called multiple people, this drug guy, some other person, her boyfriend, and to one of them, she told him that, hey, the police are there, but you'll be fine because you can just park in the alley around back and come up the side of the house. The police are inside, so you're good.
So let me get this straight. I heard you, but I'm the mental picture I have is this dude's supposed to show up like some kind of cat burglar at this active crime scene. The police, I would assume at this point, are processing. So there's cop cars, there's police officers, a 5-year-old's been shot. But hey, just like kind of slink up around the back, try to stay out of sight and come get this gun that I threw in a bush right after my 5-year-old was shot. And if you do that, I'm going to hook you up with some free pills.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Now, fortunately, he was not dumb enough to fall for that, nor was anyone else she texted that night. She did tell at least one of them in her text messages. She said, I'm on my way to the hospital. Gavin, the 2-year-old, shot Destiny. I need you to get the gun.
Okay.
I can't believe she thought anyone was going to go a house that's just been the scene of a shooting, crawling with police. Somebody's going to sneak up the side of there and snag this gun. That's insanity.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It also is bothersome that on the way to the hospital, where she's going to be with her child that is obviously quite injured, this is what she's dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the forefront of her mind is this stuff, not is my daughter okay? What can I do? What does she need?
Now, she says that some of those phone calls were to get somebody to take care of Gavin, the 2-year-old, and to have her boyfriend, Callie, meet her at the hospital.
Can I back up? And if you're going to get into this later, then just tell me to hold my horses. But yeah, you're talking about her like offering pills, free pills in exchange for somebody to be dumb enough to try to go grab a gun from an active crime scene. So is she like the neighborhood pill dealer, or do we have any information on that? Or,
well, she says marijuana, but there was some evidence that suggested there were pills being sold as well.
So it's sort of an uncontroverted fact that she's some form of a drug dealer.
She is selling drugs. Okay. Yes. She has sold drugs in the past, at least. Whether she is now or not is bit of a question.
So it's not Pampered Chef like I thought. I tried to help her out. You know, that'd be a halfway decent cover if like a lady like lady might be a generous term, but a lady like this, you know, if you were selling whatever you're selling that's illegal, you know, just make people buy some Pampered Chef and just tuck it in there and, you know.
Right. Or it used to be when you sold Avon, you got plenty of like paper bags with Avon printed on them.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, just get a lot of extra of those.
Uh-huh. Kids nowadays don't even know.
Yeah.
Okay. Avon's calling.
Right. Order a bunch of those samples. So you put a perfume sample in the bag with whatever you're selling.
Right.
And yeah.
But no, she's just like, hey, come get this gun from my house and I'll hook you up some free pills. All
right. So at the hospital, one of the police mentioned something to her about wanting to download her phone. She's not real keen on that idea. So she goes
I can imagine why.
She goes into the ladies' room And some woman's walking out of one of the stalls, and she tries to get this woman, a complete stranger she's never met before, take my phone. Even offers her money to take the phone.
Mm.
The woman's like, no. not having that. So what's the next best thing you can do? Well, she turns around to the sink and starts running her phone underwater.
This woman is not the sharpest crayon in the box.
And this is not in dispute. She doesn't deny this, that she did this. She said she was afraid that evidence of her selling drugs or marijuana or whatever would be found on there.
That's fair.
And that's why she was doing it.
That's probably true to some extent.
The phone was broken, and the police say that she did that while she had it in the bathroom. Like, screen broken, looked like it had been, I don't know, somebody tried to bend it or smack it on a sink or something. She says, no, it was like that before I went in the bathroom. But then later when she testified, she was like, yeah, I can't really say for sure. I don't know. I might have. I might not have. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Within a few hours of the shooting, close to 9 when the shooting happened, everything that we've talked about so far has happened. They're at the hospital. Then they take her over to the police station and they ask her to tell the story. And she says that they had just gotten home from the park. She got Destiny on the couch, set up with Netflix, and she was sitting on the footstool part of the couch getting ready to fix the kids their plates because she had put a roast and carrots in the crock pot earlier in the day.
Okay.
So she's sitting there on the stool getting ready to go do that when some black dude she's never seen before in her life came in her house, shot Destiny, and ran out. She thinks maybe the bullet was meant for her. But she also says, and she even adds to it, now this may be something, that 3 Mexican boys were climbing over a fence at the park and making comments about her breasts. And she told them to stop because, 1, they were teaching her son to climb the fence, and 2, they were saying disrespectful things in front of her and her daughter and her 2-year-old son. Mm-hmm. After this little thing she has with these kids, she drives around. I guess there's a fence. They're coming over it from maybe a house somewhere, a building or something. So she drives around to find, like, where they live and wants to talk to their parents, and she finds 2 Mexican men and told them they needed to teach their sons to be respectful and what they were saying in front of her and her daughter. She doesn't really say they say anything after that. She just says she drove away, and maybe this has something to do with the car she thought was following her.
Just to clarify, Robin, she's white, right?
Yes.
So all of her problems are being blamed on dudes that are not white.
Yeah, but I think there's, to some degree, I think there's an explanation for part of that, and I'll tell you about in a minute. But
put a pin in it.
So at this point during this interview, Robin denies that she owns a gun, denies that she has a gun in the house, but eventually she says that her boyfriend, Callie, left a gun there for her protection because of her volatile relationship with Antoine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Antoine is Destiny's father, and Callie is Robin's current boyfriend.
Okay.
But she insists that this gun that Callie had left her to protect herself was not the murder weapon, that the strange man that came in came in with a gun.
And meant to shoot her, but shot Destiny, looked surprised, and then left. That's her theory.
Yeah.
But now, like, if he wanted to kill her, don't you think he would have just shot her when he missed?
Kept shooting?
Yeah, like, sorry.
Anyway. Yeah, there's a whole lot of questions. Now, at one point, she says that Callie pulled the gun on Antoine on the day of the shooting. But then a witness said that they saw Robin pull a gun on Antoine the day of the shooting. Not that Callie pulled it, Robin pulled it. But that when that happened, Antoine took it from her and, like, took it apart. Hang on to that thought for a minute, because police are still skeptical of this whole strange intruder theory.
Mm-hmm.
And so they suggest that maybe Antoine, Destiny's father, maybe he was involved.
Okay.
You know, they're thinking he's involved. And initially she says, no, Antoine didn't do it. He wasn't involved in it at all. But eventually then she says, yeah, you're right. It was Antoine. He shot her. And the reason I didn't say so from the beginning is because, you know, he's Destiny's father. And even though he shot her, he didn't do it on purpose. She says that in this version of the story that Antoine showed up at her house and he wanted to talk and she refused. And so he left. Then she says Antoine came back with a gun and shot Destiny.
Is Antoine white, black, Mexican? What is he?
He is black.
Okay.
So she even goes so far as to circle his picture in one of those photo lineups.
Oh, I see.
Done the wrong way, of course, where you have 6 on one page.
Right.
Which is not how you... But that's neither here nor there. Just saying she fully then committed
to this. Yep, it was Antoine.
Yeah, she's all on it. And it sounds like the way she describes things is that they had this scuffle, the gun went off in the tussle while he was holding it sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
And police mentioned to her, once she confirms that, you know, what they're thinking, that it was Antoine, they're like, you know, this is like racist that you just sort of made up this imaginary black dude. Why he got to be black?
Well, if Antoine's black, then wouldn't that line up with what she's now claiming actually happened? Just she happens to know the black guy, it's not some unknown black guy?
That could be one explanation if the Antoine story were true, which it's not.
It just seems really bizarre to me that they would label her as racist and all this.
But the thing is, and not that I want to defend this woman in any way, but Callie, her current boyfriend, he's black.
Mm-hmm.
Antoine, Destiny's father, is black. Gavin's father is black. It's more likely that when the 911 operator asked her and caught her off guard of who did this and what color were they, black was just the first thing that came to mind, not to try and frame a minority for the sake of being racist, but because her social circle is largely black and that's what's most familiar to her.
Well, and if she's going to come up with a story or spin a tale that makes her look as good as she can in this situation, it gives her options on who to pin this on, right? Because that's pretty much what happened. They're like, well, wasn't it really Antoine? Oh, yep, it was. And then it's not, well, why did you tell 911 it was a white guy? If it was Antoine, it's, well, you told him it was a black guy. And Antoine's just black, so
right,
it kind of lines up with that initial story.
It's a teeny bit closer to the truth.
Right.
But at any point, I've heard this accusation before when someone makes up a fake perpetrator and assigns that person a race that, oh, you picked that race because you're racist. In some cases, I think that's 100% true. I don't think that's the case for this woman. I think that's just what her mind visualized the minute she tried to make up an imaginary person.
Yeah, that's fair. And initially, when you were saying what she tells the 911 or the police that it's a unknown black guy, and then she's at the park and she has this issue with these
Mexican
boys, as she says, yeah, my mind started to go there too, of like, wow, it sounds like she's just kind of racist. But
right,
as you fill it in a little more, I mean, maybe she is, I don't know. But
it could be. I just didn't get that.
It doesn't seem like this part of her story is motivated in that way, at least.
Yeah, there's very little that you can make sense of out of her story, but that seemed to me to not be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So police then tell her that there was a gun found outside, because none of her friends went and picked it up, and they want to make sure that it is not the gun that Robin said that Callie had given to her for protection, because she had said, you know, no, that wasn't the gun that was used. So they're like, okay, we want to make sure, so can we get your DNA and compare it to the gun? Well, she kind of ponders there for a few seconds and says, well, you know, it probably is the same gun that Callie had put it outside. But at one point, she also said that Antoine put the gun outside, and I had a hard time keeping straight which thing was said first or not, because it kept changing.
Mm-hmm.
She initially says that the gun Callie gave her was not the murder weapon, but eventually she does admit that, yeah, it was. Later, she says that Antoine was there, but it was her 2-year-old Gavin that got a hold of the gun and shot his sister.
Okay, so just to be clear, we've went from unknown, unnamed black intruder who randomly shot Destiny to Antoine shot Destiny, but probably was trying to shoot her and just missed, to now the 2-year-old son was the one who shot Destiny. So we've got three, according to her, by her own fairy tales.
Yes.
There are three different shooter theories to this point.
Yeah, in about 3 hours since the shooting happened.
Okay. Wow. All right.
That's the trouble with it. Yeah, and again, I don't want to say that she insisted that Antoine intentionally shot Destiny, because it's a little fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
And she said so many things in the interviews that I did definitely catch the part where it sounded like it was an accident thing, especially when she said, you know, I didn't say this at first because I know he didn't mean to. It wasn't on purpose. But she was totally hanging him out to dry.
Yeah.
If you're circling the picture of him in the lineup, you know what's coming next.
Right.
You know, they're not using that on their Christmas cards. They're using that to go get him. So she ends up, I think it was 2 days later on September 17th, she comes in for another interview. And this time she says that she was in the kitchen getting the roast out when Antoine came in screaming and hollering about Callie. Antoine, Destiny's daddy, had some kind of issue with Callie. She says her and Antoine argued and got in a tussle. She told him to leave, and he did. Gavin, she says, I guess while all this was going down, went in her room, and Destiny was on the couch watching Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Robin says, then she went into the living room, sat down on the couch, and she heard a gunshot. Gavin, she says, must have gotten it from the top shelf of her bedroom closet.
Okay, a two-year-old.
Two-year-old.
Okay.
Yes. Robin also says that during or immediately after that scuffle with Anton, she didn't know what he was capable of, so she went into her room and retrieved the gun from the black bag it was kept in, which is supposed to be on this shelf.
This is in the same version of this same story she's telling right now about Gavin getting it, maybe, sort of?
This is in the same interview.
Oh, okay, but this is as the story is morphing into, like...
It went a few different directions.
Version 7B.25.3.
And this was not one where it's like the police picked and chose pieces of things she said. Like, you can watch the interrogation video for yourself and see what she's clearly saying and they're confirming. And, like, okay, that's not what you just said a few minutes ago.
She's just all over the place.
She doesn't seem to be afraid to either say, I made a mistake, or just flat out tell you, yeah, I lied.
Hmm.
In another version during the same interview, she says Gavin shot Destiny after Antoine left. Now, during one conversation with the police, Robin said that the gun was kept in her bedroom closet on the shelf above the clothing, and she says that Gavin might have used a stool to reach it. At one point it was a chair, at another time it was a stool. And that if he didn't reach it from the shelf, well, then it must not have been there where it was normally kept. That's where Callie must have put it someplace different after that run-in where she tried to pull it on Antoine, and Antoine took it from her and took it apart.
Well, keep it in the bush, keep it on the top shelf of the closet. You know, I mean, it has lots of places.
Which, I don't know how effective this gun is for protection if the person that you're pulling it on that's causing a problem at your house takes it from you and disassembles it in front of you.
I got questions.
That would be the point of, this thing doesn't do me any good. Anyway, she does admit that she put the gun under the bush, and she says to the police that she hid it and made up the other stories to protect her son from spending his life knowing he killed his sister.
Okay. That's a story.
And of course, because they want to know when she switches to this Gavin did it kind of thing, why would you tell us all these other stories? Why'd you blame this other dude and you blamed Antoine? And they're like, what do you... And she says, to protect Gavin. They're like, do you think we're going to go arrest a two-year-old and make him do hard time? Like, seriously? And she says that, she doesn't want him to spend his whole life knowing he killed his sister. Now, in court, she actually took the stand, which different feelings on that a lot of people have, I know, but it was interesting. On the stand, she says that she went outside to move her car while Destiny was on the couch watching Netflix and Gavin was in the living room. So we're consistent on this part all the way through.
Of moving the car out of the way of the mailbox.
Yes.
So that is one thing that has remained the same.
That is, and the fact that the Netflix comes up in every version. So
there's a good chance that there was actually Netflix involved that night.
She's got the Netflix. Plus, there was a what looked like the bullet grazed the remote that Destiny was holding in her hand when she got shot. So, I mean, the Netflix is a for sure thing.
Okay.
She says that the person came to her home that night was Jay, a man who had tinted the windows on her car the day before. He was there to get his money for doing the work. And the reason she didn't pay him at the time he did the work, because there were bubbles in the tent, and she wanted to know if they were going to go away. So she, they worked out, come back tomorrow, and I'll pay you.
Had the cops ever heard about Jay, or was trial the first time we learned about Jay the tent master?
The defense case during trial, the end of the trial here, is the first time we've ever heard about Jay and the tent and the bubbles.
Okay.
And she says that she went ahead and paid Jay, but a lesser amount than what they had originally agreed to, because the bubbles had not gone away.
Yeah, you don't want bubbles in your tent. That's bad.
Well, agreed. And Jay left, and that was that. So she moved her car, and she was smoking while she did that, and as she's walking back up to her front door, she saw a flash of light go off.
Okay, so now she's outside when the shooting happens.
Yes. And as she's approaching that door, coming up the porch, she sees a flash of light. When she goes in the house, Gavin is screaming and crying, and the gun was on the ground. Callie wasn't there. Antoine wasn't there. The unknown black dude wasn't there. None of that. And when her attorney asked her what was going through her mind at that moment, she responded, sobbing, I couldn't f***ing believe what was going on.
This is like version number... major version number 5, so it's a little hard to
Yeah. Right?
Gosh.
So after the shooting, she says she took the gun outside because she didn't want it to cause any more harm. One interesting point I thought the state made was on cross-examination. Robin said during the questioning then that she hadn't seen the gun for 2 days since that incident happened where she pulled it on Antoine and all that. And so the state points out that, like, this gun was in your house, and for 2 days you hadn't laid eyes on it anywhere in your house. You didn't lay eyes on it. But in 3 minutes, a 2-year-old found it and shot his sister with it.
Right. A 2-year-old.
Right.
Like, I'm not even convinced a 2-year-old could, and I'm sure you're going to get into this, but I'm not even convinced a 2-year-old could shoot a gun. Or if they could, I mean...
There's some question about that, too. Her answer to this, all about this deal, is that on September 12th, 2 days before this shooting, Antoine had dropped Destiny off at her house, and he was irate, got into a confrontation with Callie. She went in the house and got the gun and went out and told Antoine to leave. Antoine took it from her, took it apart, dropped it on the ground. Callie picked it up and put it back together. They went inside and she told Callie to put it up. So she assumed he had put it up in top of the closet, but
maybe he didn't. Maybe he put it in the 2-year-old's dresser.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Now, I got to tell you a couple other clues here before we get into some of this lady's craziness.
We're not into her craziness yet?
Well, before we pick it apart too much.
Okay.
Her defense says that she's just trying to protect her young son, Gavin, and that she didn't change her story from the unknown intruder to Antoine did it until the police suggested it. Mm-hmm. And that she even denied it initially, but she ended up going along with the Antoine did it story because she was not in the right state of mind for an interview a few hours after watching the shooting death of her 5-year-old, and that police should have waited to question her.
It didn't surprise me at all when her initial story is what it was, and then I can almost hear the police somewhat suggestively, you know, oh, well, was this really Antoine? And then I can imagine her, whether that's true or not, thinking, hey, that's not a bad idea, because if it's him, then that gets me off the hook. So, sure, yeah, it was Antoine.
Right, and I hate Antoine anyway.
Right, like, actually, you know what? I wish I'd have thought of that in the first place. Yeah, let's blame it on him.
Right, I mean, you know, she might have gotten somewhere if she had gone with that in the beginning.
And just stuck with it.
And stuck with it. You know, probably, but they were not buying this strange dude runs in your house, shoots, and runs out.
Right.
They weren't buying it at all. And they did use all the police tactics, and they did do the, you know, got mad at her and yelled at her. And that's where the defense says that, well, the issue is that Robin was raped by a police officer and suffered from PTSD, which she told them early on in the interview.
Oh, wow.
And that they yelled at her, scared her, and she told them what she thought they wanted to hear, just because she's already in a bad way witnessing this, but she has this crazy fear of police. Not crazy fear, but
it's like
heightened, super heightened fear of police.
That's based on something awful that happened to her. So that's totally... And so she made the police aware of that, and they still proceeded to kind of use some of this more aggressive questioning.
It didn't seem like they really... At the one point, it's while the cop is sort of yelling at her that she sort of blurts that out. So it's hard to say if he really even heard it, but it just kind of moved on. She says in March of 2018, she was doing 30 days of community service for a failure to appear on a speeding ticket. The way it worked, I guess, every jurisdiction is different, but the way it worked is that a bus driven by an officer, I was police officer, corrections officer, or what, would come around and pick up the people doing community service, take them to the job site, which was a landfill, and would supervise the workers there. And this person, this officer, whoever, whatever capacity, directed her to go in the office and clean up the office, one of those trailer kind of things, and that he followed her in there and sexually assaulted her. Now, the accused officer ended up pleading to giving a false statement, and Robin was awarded somehow $10,000. It sounds to me like something to that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's a way, I don't know how things go. Maybe they couldn't prove the sexual assault or whatever, but some things that were weird to me is that they asked her while she was on the stand if she knew what the outcome of that, of her allegation was. Was he prosecuted for it? And she's like, well, I assume so. And do you know that what he actually pled to, was convicted of, is this false information? And, you know, you got money out of this, right? And she acknowledged the money, but she, I guess, didn't understand that this guy was never charged or convicted of sexual assault. And I don't really understand that. I don't know, because I'm not in that situation, but it struck me as like, how would she think that that had ever progressed if she had never been called into court or anything?
Well, I think...
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things there, right? Like, one, you know, we're kind of court nerds, and so we're in this sphere and in this world enough that I think we probably understand more than even just the average person about how these things work and what you have to do and all that kind of stuff. So if she comes from a background where, you know, maybe she's not as familiar with that kind of thing, yeah, maybe she really just doesn't know. And I see this with people in court, not all the time, but regularly enough, that they really don't understand, you know, the ins and outs of how it works and what has to happen for cases to kind of make their way to the finish line. And I think too, you know, something like that, I mean, that's traumatic. It's tragic. I'm sure, you know, everybody kind of responds to that sort of thing differently. And some people, you know, they just don't want anything to do with it at all. And some people are the opposite. You know, they want to kind of see it all the way through to the end. And so I just think, I don't think it's crazy to think that in a situation like that, you know, maybe she just wants to move on, put it behind her, not think about it, assumes that, well, I've reported it, or it's been given to these people who will then take care of it.
Yeah,
and this
I can
person
see
will be
that.
Dealt with.
I can see perhaps being naive and not knowing how, you know, maybe not having much experience or knowing many things about how that stuff works, that maybe that was her thought, is that I reported it and then they take care of it, and she just assumes he's in prison.
Right.
And that's that, and that's just how it works. I guess I could see that. I was more thinking of, I would assume that even if you didn't know how things worked, you would want a follow-up of, okay, he got 10 years or whatever, he got life, but I guess you're right. There are certainly folks that survive that kind of thing that really just don't want to know or think about any detail of it at all. So maybe that's where she was coming from. The other argument of the defense to try and explain all the stories she told and whatnot is that after she had told the police that Gavin shot Destiny, they told her that they didn't believe that, and that if she wanted to stick to that story, he would be subjected to a forensic interview, and they sort of described how that would go, and it sort of sounds like sort of pressed her to make this forensic interview sound like it would not be fun for Gavin, and did she really want to put him through that?
Mm.
Now, at this point, Gavin is person number 3 that she's identified as the shooter. So maybe they were just pushing from all directions. To me, by the time you get to the 3rd story, I don't even know, like, if you can believe anything she's going to tell you. What use is it?
Right.
But the defense attorney's point was they were pushing her not to tell the truth, what she said was the truth of the Gavin story, because, you know, it was going to be bad for Gavin. So they were trying to, according to the defense, push her into the Antoine did it. Mm. The child died. I mean, this 5-year-old child is dead. And to try and figure out exactly what happened, I don't think we'll ever know. But we know the bullet came out of that gun that was found under the bush, the gun that had been in Robin's home. Ballistics prove it. Done deal. That's where the bullet came from. Who pulled the trigger? Well, the video suggests that it was only Robin, Destiny, and Gavin that were in the home at the time of the shooting, unless it occurred during the 63 seconds that Jay or whoever was in that car was in the house, but nobody has claimed that. In the end, she was convicted of reckless homicide, not felony murder, which she was also charged with, and I think that was an either-or. Could be wrong, but I think that was an either-or on those two charges. She was also convicted of aggravated child neglect, making a false report, first pointing to the unknown black dude, tampering with evidence, and I think that was for the phone deal, or it might have been with the gun, because
could've
she also said
both.
That she had wiped the gun down before she put it outside under the bush. And attempted tampering with evidence. I think one of those was the gun and one of those was the phone.
The felony murder charge, is that aggravated child neglect that she was found guilty of, was that a felony?
Yes.
So that's really interesting to me that the jury chose not to convict her of felony murder, because really for felony murder, you just have to have a homicide, a death, and a felony that kind of happens at the same time. So the fact they found her guilty of the aggravated child neglect and that Destiny died, I mean, there's really no reason not to convict her of felony murder unless they just felt that that was going to be too harsh. That's kind of bizarre to me. That's a little It makes me think that the jury felt some sort of pity or just felt like, you know, maybe this was some kind of tragic accident, not so much, and they didn't want to hit her with this harsher crime.
I don't know. As I understand it, and we talked about this before, but as I understand it, the aggravated child neglect carries a minimum of a 15-year sentence, which is more than what the sentence for reckless homicide would be. Now, felony murder, that could get you life, but and maybe that was the jury's issue. There was also a very long, and I remember, you know, listening to this argument one day on the way to record with you, a long, long debate between the prosecutor and the judge about the jury instructions on felony murder.
Mm-hmm.
And they were speaking different languages, and they could not understand why they couldn't understand each other. There was an issue, a long issue, and I don't want to say it was heated. They were a little frustrated because, you know, the prosecutor saying it's as simple as it can be, and the judge is like, yeah, it is, you're wrong. And the prosecutor's like, no, you're wrong. So I don't know if that argument somehow ended up playing into whatever those instructions ended up being. I don't know if that somehow played into the felony murder, them convicting on that or not. But her sentencing is scheduled for April the 19th.
Right around the corner.
Yeah. Watching this woman during her interviews and watching her on the stand, I'm in no position to confirm or deny her sexual assault allegation. If that happened, the man, officer, whoever he was that did it, should be hung by his nuts from the highest of poles, because that's a disturbingly disgusting thing for a person in a position of power to do. But I don't know. I wasn't there. My guess is, though, this woman, I don't think her elevator's going to the top floor. Like, I'm pretty sure if you gave her an IQ test, she'd probably be in double digits, but she's not getting into Mensa.
But at the same time, and I can't disagree with that at all. At the same time, you know, I mean, she's making a pot roast with carrots and she's got Netflix. It doesn't sound like these kids were in a situation where they were malnourished or she took them to the park. I assume that actually happens.
When her attorney had her on the stand and was questioning her, the reason that she went to this park that she went to that was in another city is because the park in Fountain City there, the rides aren't as modern and they're broken down, and she didn't want her kids to get hurt.
So she's not even just taking them to the park, she's taking them to the Gucci park.
Yeah, right. And then when she tells about how she moved the car and was coming back inside and she was smoking, because she doesn't smoke in the house around her kids. So my guess is the defense attorney helped her figure out how to sprinkle in some I'm a good mom things.
Some Martha Stewart stuff.
Which I assume is, you know, legit and legal. It made me question the sincerity of it because of where it came out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if all that's legit, then yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like she had an evil heart. That's what I'm saying basically is I think she's pretty dumb.
Yeah.
If I were the defense attorney, I'd be asking if she really could appreciate the predicament she was putting those kids in.
So in all this, it sounds like the trial's over and we really don't know what happened.
No. Now, the state made it clear that they're like, look, we are not arguing that she shot her kid. We're not saying that at all. We're saying that if you go by her own story,
her negligence allowed it to happen.
Right. She left her children alone in this house with this gun that she really didn't know where it was, loaded, safety off, ready to fire.
Wow. And Antoine or the 2-year-old or some random person or the boogeyman or whoever was right. able to get it and to shoot Destiny.
Right, because now we know, you know, in the end that it was her gun, the one that Callie had left her. It definitely was that gun. So if somebody showed up with a gun off the street and ran into the house and did it, well, okay, that wouldn't be her fault.
Mm-hmm.
But if her gun was used and the only people in the house when the shooting happened were, depending on which version, the 2 kids or the 2 kids and her, the state says, you know, that right there is what aggravated child neglect is about.
Oh my gosh. That's a horrible story. Horrible. Just, I mean, this 5-year-old, I'm curious, was there any testimony or were there any experts who testified about trajectory? Because assuming this 2-year-old theory, you know, 2-year-olds are not very tall. Let's say the gun was not on the top of the closet, because that seems unlikely that he'd be able to get it. But let's say, like, in one of her versions, somebody, some boyfriend or whatever, had moved it and left it somewhere the 2-year-old could get it. So let's say the 2-year-old's got it and somehow, you know, fidgets, whatever, does something and makes this gun go off. would that line up with the way in which, you know, because Destiny's sitting on a couch and she's watching TV, it sounds like. I would think if an adult pulled the trigger, you know, you would have sort of a downward angle and this bullet would be going through her into the couch, into the wall or whatever at that kind of an angle versus, you know, a 2-year-old is probably gonna be more of a flat, you know, assuming that that could even happen, more of a flat or a lower trajectory than if it was a full grown person.
That came up a little bit. They had this stuffed doll that was 1/4 scale of what Destiny would have been. So it was really difficult to perceive. At one point there was the police officer was being questioned by the defense attorney, who is an outright character in his own right. Long white hair, little glasses. He's something else. They got into it. The defense attorney got into it with several of the witnesses, but one of them was this police officer who had apparently made some comment about the couch being high, you know, suggesting that the 2-year-old shooting her on the couch wouldn't have been this way. And I mean, the lawyer just dogged the crap out of him for ever mentioning that the couch was high and higher. And the police officer just kept saying, okay, fine, it was a normal couch. It was a normal couch. Yeah, look, fine, it was a normal couch. And they kept going back and forth. So I don't think there's anything particularly conclusive about the trajectory. They did believe, like I said, that it had deflected off of the remote and ended up in her chest. So that was another question. Based on her multiple stories, one time Destiny's laying on the couch, then she's sitting there. It's hard to figure out where she exactly was at the moment of the shooting. I get what you're saying. But there was no smoking gun on that aspect of it.
And ultimately, to the state's point, you know, it's smart for them to argue the way they did and to make it clear to the jury. If, for what they charged her with, that doesn't really matter. Doesn't make a difference. But in terms of, you know, just kind of being curious and wondering what actually happened in the house that day, you know, I wondered if there was some way that some of the evidence could have revealed that.
They did find a shell casing in the couch. They had originally accused Robin of hiding that, but then it turned up eventually in the couch. And they also, there was gunshot residue on the front of Gavin's shirt and shorts and on the front of Robin's dress. So if Gavin shot the gun, he's got GSR on him. She comes in, picks him up and holds him. Now she's got GSR on her.
Mm-hmm.
Or
both there when the gun goes off.
That either says they were both there when the gun went off, or one of them was there when the gun went off and she held him afterward.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really fill in a whole lot of blanks. That's why I went back to, okay, we know this gun shot this girl on this couch. And like you said, for the aggravated neglect, if it's her gun that shot her child and she had control over it, well, then it's kind of on her.
What a tragic case. And, you know, I think it's a good chance to just take a second and say, hey, listen, if you're going to exercise the rights that you have in the United States to have a gun, do it responsibly, man. I mean, it is not proper, okay, or whatever, to have a gun just sitting around, cocked, loaded, ready to roll, fully loaded, whatever, and not locked up, not out of the reach of realistically anybody. Because you never know when some rando is going to show up at your house, or somebody breaks in, or if you have kids, or they have friends over, or your friends have kids, or whatever. I'm not giving you legal advice. You need to look at the laws and the rules and the regulations and all that stuff that's out there. There's plenty of it.
Well, how about this? If not for the reason of, you know, not wanting people to get killed accidentally or whatever with your guns, if that's not a good enough reason to make sure you've got your shit locked up and inaccessible to people that you don't want to have access to it, how about the fact that you got this woman in Tennessee who her gun killed her 5-year-old? She's going to prison for that for a period of time. And then in Michigan, you have James and Jennifer Crumbly, who are both about to be sentenced for 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter because their son accessed their weapon and shot a lot more than that, but killed 4 kids in his school. So if the saving lives isn't enough incentive, going to jail for it should really encourage us to be responsible.
Yeah, be responsible. I mean, come on, have some responsibility. If you're going to be a gun owner, be a responsible gun owner. That's the message of the day. Make sure your stuff, you're following. There's all sorts of information out there on how to properly store weapons, how to take care of them, all that. And that's part and parcel of it. You know, everybody wants to talk about oh, I have these rights. Well, yeah, okay, that's great, but you need to exercise them responsibly. So if you're going to have an implement that's capable of doing that sort of thing, you need to respect it and be responsible with it. So that's our PSA for the day. And the Crumbly case, that might be one for us to talk about in the future. Certainly some interesting legal nuance there. And you said that he accessed their gun. And my understanding was at those trials, I think there was some evidence that maybe they bought that gun for him as a gift, even though he couldn't legally, and I guess it depends on whose you believe. But yeah, certainly some interesting things in that case that we could maybe talk about in a future episode.
Sounds like a plan. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us on the Brothers in Crime podcast. Feedback and suggestions are always welcome. For links and resources related to this episode, please see the show notes or visit us at brothersincrimepodcast.com. We hope you'll save, subscribe, or bookmark us on your favorite podcast site and join us for the next episode.